Hey everybody, my name is Alex, and this is Lunchbox Radio Con Report. Now, I just saw that the most recent con report, meaning my report on the second day of the convention, didn't post. Which is okay, because I'm going to talk about it here. I meant it to post this morning that I'm recording it, which is the 19th, aka the last day of the convention. And I'm checking out of a hotel, whole thing, and I guess it just didn't go through. It didn't do the thing, as they say. So I'm gonna just like bring my thoughts just all together here a little bit. And that's actually good because I wanted to talk about something that I noticed at Anime NYC that I started to get into in the last, in the second of these con updates, but I didn't really have a full scope of my thoughts on it at that point. But now I really do. And that's something that I noticed with the convention, but I noticed kind of all around, and in everyday life. If I sound insane, it's because I am still recording on my phone because I don't feel like sitting at my desk to do this, because I've established a pattern and it allowed me to record on my phone. So I'm gonna. But my point here is that, how should I put this? The finances of the world have really changed pretty quickly. And as a result, it feels a little bit like everything's been like drawing the short straw. So the reason why I'm bringing this up at all is because it's a real life saying, but it applies to anime and anime fandom and this convention specifically, in the fact that don't get me wrong, they're still throwing this big party for anime fans. That is still true. But the difference is that the party has a little less than it had, if that makes any sense. The anime world will continue to be commercialized and be very different in its treatment as a commercial entity, but you'll also always have like the indie scene. But the things I'm concerned about are not necessarily the one half of this coin, which is I saw very little, at least in my forays through the Artist Alley, which were many, I saw very little risk-taking with the kinds of products people were selling, if that makes any sense. So a thing that I noticed last year in a big way, and I've got a bunch in a pin case here, is I noticed last year that there were a bunch of people selling enamel pins. Like, enamel pins were very in thing, and people were going for it. They had done a bunch of enamel pins. Now, a couple of those vendors I just didn't see here this year, and I understand why people would or wouldn't do Art Dallies. I saw a great video a couple of weeks ago about like how profitable an Art Dally can be, but that particular artist was really organized about it and had clearly done it many, many times. So I was actually surprised that it was a positive video instead of a negative video, because oftentimes when you see that kind of content, it's wholly negative. It's like, this is how much money I lose by doing Art Dallies, and this is why I'm never going to do another one again. But So I didn't see a few of those vendors back at the Artist Alley this year. But I didn't see a whole lot of last year I saw lots of different Artist Alley vendors offering enamel pins. And while it's probably true that those things didn't sell, so they didn't make more of them, it also tells me that there's, like, it's not that there's not a market for these pins. They still have a pin. They still have a pin bazaar at the end of the con that I actually didn't go to because I was in a different, very awesome panel that I will get to in a second. But it more felt like that no one wanted to take the risk. So I've talked about her every single episode of this con report because she was very kind and very courteous, and I helped her work her Square reader out because I was her first customer. Over on Eat Slug's booth, she actually gave me a pin for having the patience and helping her with the Square stuff, which she totally didn't need to do. But she was one of the only, artists in the Artist Alley who was offering a custom enamel pin that wasn't wholly what they did. Like, I passed another booth that was just definitely like, this is what we do. This is our whole bread and butter. We've got this figured out. Last year, you saw a lot more really complex, like, brooch-style pins, lapel pins, like, crazy, like, stuff that was not even cosplay-related, just, like, this seems like a cool three-part pin that I had an idea to make, so I made it, and I'm selling it here, and it's some insane amount, like, it's like a $50 pin, but it's worth every penny. There was very little of that, first off. Another thing was, and I wasn't super looking very hard. I didn't see a pull-through of any particular super popular thing. Like, there wasn't, like, 9 zillion Jujutsu Kaisen fan arts out there. There was kind of something for everybody, but there wasn't, like, you couldn't collect 9 portraits of Satoru Gojo kind of thing. I mean, you could, but it wasn't, like, there wasn't one complete through line. And then on the other end of the con floor, the middle of the con floor kind of always will be what it is, which is this real hodgepodge of stuff. I got a couple DS games. I got DS games. It's really the middle of the con floor story of just, like, and it's really interesting. Because of the way that booth costs work and that it costs to go to these shows, you get people who have, like, whole shops who don't have a very big booth, but their booth is important. But their shops are, like, known. So, like, I spent, I want to say, like, 10, for like, a couple minutes digging through Nintendo DS carts looking for something I wanted, and I ended up, like, walking away with a live-action Avatar The Last Airbender because it was so cursed I had to know. DS cart for, like, $15 because it's a dead system. And I actually did bring my 3DS with me, and I got street passes. I think I talked about that in the first con report. And I've got a bunch of street passes. I didn't get street passes today on the last day because my DS was close to dead, and I left the charger at home thinking, oh, it'll last 3 days. It almost lasted 3 days, to be fair. It technically did. It could not last a fourth. And I was playing it. I played my new Tetris game on it. I got the Japanese version of Tetris DS for $16. I got a weird Soul Eater thing for $27. But, like, that middle of the con floor stuff will never go away. It will always kind of be what it is. If you're looking for secrets, for, like, secret cool stuff, it's worth digging into that stuff when you go to a con. Like, that's where you're going to find, like, stuff you're not familiar with. Like, so the same guy who I got the, like, who I got the one-off out-of-box cart for, people were coming to him and being like, do you have this? And he'd be like, yes. And it was very funny. There was a guy who came dressed like full cosplay as a Gundam. Not the coolest Gundam as a show. The coolest Gundam belonged to somebody built a like a larger than a human, but not Gundam, like obviously not Gundam size, Gundam robot suit that they were piloting, and they like put on a big show. I've got videos of it that I can, that I'm gonna post on social media at some point. But I actually already have posted on TikTok. But the guy just looked, the retro game guy was just like, don't even talk to me. I know what you want here. And he just like put the Gundam game in front of him. And he's like, oh shit. And he's like, I'm gonna buy this, but this isn't what I wanted. What I was asking, what I was going to ask about. And he's like, oh, what do you want? And he didn't have the game that the guy wanted, because the game that the guy wanted was pretty rare. But so was that other game. Case in point, someone else, while I was still, like, rummaging through carts, came up asking about that game. And, like, I looked up, I'm like, didn't you just? He's like, yeah, I did. And he had just sold it. Like, it was, so my point is that, like, those tables of old DVDs and Blu-rays, those tables of just, like, stuff, that if you go looking, there's probably something in there. There's probably something worth your time in there. Like, and lots of people like me and, like me, go to these conventions hunting for shit. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about was, had to pertain with that, like, same downsizing of everything and, like, the pomp and circumstance is a little missing. I noticed on my second day, and I didn't really notice it on my third day, because I didn't go to that particular kind of panel again on my third day, is I went to the Aniplex panel, the Aniplex industry panel. And it was like sitting through a press release, mainly because you kind of were sitting through a press release delivered by two enthusiastic, but definitely reading off of sheets of paper kind of things. And that was true of the pre-show, of the pre-premiere Metallic Rouge interview, and the post-premiere Metallic Rouge interview. By the way, Metallic Rouge looks very interesting. It looked very cool. But it's like, it's an interesting, bizarre thing that, like, and I get that it's hard to be a PR person and, like, get on stage, but it's part of the performance, and just, like, in the moment, and I didn't even really notice it as much until after I had seen people who were, like, professionals. Like, professional. Like, they put on the performance full on. So, the Crunchyroll main stage this time was in the, like, mezzanine, the, like, the smaller fourth floor of the convention, of the convention hall, of the Javits. And so it was like, you're surrounded by glass, they've got a big screen, and for the most part, they had hype men basically running a daytime, like, on-the-street news show, which was wild, because I did that first thing this morning, first thing on my third day. So I just went there, I watched the premiere of Tale of the Two Wedding Rings. Which was interesting. And then I had to skedaddle, I think, to go to, I just got skedaddle to go to Isaac's industry panel, which is always fun because I get to see Evan and poke at him. And I've known Evan for a while now, so it's just like, oh, hey, what's up? But the whole experience of that and of the high card panel, which was kind of masterfully handled, and even the Great Pretender panel that I went to on the second days, were kind of put in stark relief, like, oh, there's being prepared and being, like, laser focused on, like, hitting your points, and then they're being prepared but being loose enough to, like, adapt, and it feel like when there's audience participation, there can be audience participation. It's not just like you being kind of a corporate shill. And that's what the interview for the Metallic Rouge, for the Studio Bones guest, felt like. It felt super on rails, and like it wasn't, at least while I was there, it didn't feel magical. It didn't feel like you were finding something out that you didn't. It felt like you were being spoon-fed the stuff they wanted you to find out. That was very clear about what's up there. And maybe that's just me as an old anime fan and being more interested in the minutia and weirdness of stuff. But the panels I went to that were, like, incredible are, The last panel of the day that I went to for my third day was actually the hip-hop and anime panel, and it was the duo from a rap group called Hybrid Thoughts, that's a rap collective out of Boston, but these two are responsible for most of the hip-hop you hear in anime. Down to the point of, like, they have shows they've worked on at this point that most people haven't seen. Like, one of them just said, like, has anybody here seen Sakugan? And the entire room just silent. And he's like, yeah. And you know why you haven't seen it? Because the only reviews of that show said, the only good thing about this show is the soundtrack. And that's our part. So we are very vindicated. But And that was cool because they were talking about hip-hop and the industry and, like, how they intersect with anime and, like, the blending of anime culture and hip-hop culture. And at the end, it was really loose. I went up and I talked to them and, you know, thanked them for coming out, the whole thing. No, I'm not saying everybody has to do that. I'm not saying everybody has to, every panel needs to be that kind of loose and that kind of, like, remembering faces in the crowd from last year, that kind of thing. But what I am saying is there's a happy medium, and I think what it looks like is something like the high card panel. So the high card panel was very clearly designed to have the production team behind, a part of the production team behind High Card be there for a world premiere panel, because this was late at night on the second day, and they were premiering season 2 of High Card, and the production team, for whatever reason, couldn't make the scheduling work, so they didn't end up being there. So it was only the TMS of America, you know, publicity person up front, and she knocked it out of the park. Seriously, she was just like, she was upbeat, she was loose, she was like with it, she was like hitting the points, but she did everything she needed to do. But it didn't, at no point did you feel like it was scripted. It felt it felt delivered. You felt delivered to, but you didn't feel like you were being press released at. You felt like she ran a game afterwards, and it was all really, it was slick without being so mechanical that it was impersonal. And that's what so much of my problem with the show was, is it felt, and I, don't get me wrong, I had a fun-ass time. I was ready to leave when I left, but I had a fun-ass time. But my biggest two problems with the show were whenever I encountered that, like, I'm being press-released at moments, or there was a, and this going back to what I was talking about with, like, the missing of, like, big shots in the dark from the artist alley, On the other end, on the much more corporate end, the booths were not as outlandish this year. I don't think they have to be, but it's that there's something to be said for spending the money on a presentation to your fandoms. So last year, you can probably go find them on my Instagram feed, actually. But last year, you'll see pictures of, like, big life-size statues of, like, big, like, they had a big blow-up, I think, of Super Saiyan God Mode Goku. They had a big blow-up of Luffy. And those served two purposes. Those were, like, big, cool things. They also served as, like, waypoints that you could navigate by, which was much harder this year, actually. But the big impressive part is important because it's like it's Viz or whoever the booth is way of saying, like, hey, like, this is what you come to the show for. You come to the show for this, like, big impressive, these big impressive set pieces. And the way the show went this year, that was all kind of, like, squirreled away up in the top floor, right outside of the Crunchyroll main stage. So you didn't have them, like, just around for you to discover. So, I'm gonna shout out a t-shirt brand that I actually, an anime streetwear brand that was so good that I went back to find it because I got an enamel pin from them that now is living on my bag. Living on my little red, shoulder bag. But they were called, Madness and Company. And they had an excellent booth. First off, they were playing really great hip-hop music because they're probably an all-black-owned anime-inspired streetwear brand where they've really slick branding. And they built, essentially, an old-school Japanese street food stall at their booth. And they were like, they were moving product. And they brought enough product to have, to kind of just have whatever you would want. It was like, if you saw something that they were carrying, with probably a few exceptions, they definitely had your size, which is like, I don't think I saw them before. I think they probably just started up over the last year. But, like, that's the way to do it. Like, you make sure you bring enough inventory for people to get what they want. You don't want people to leave disappointed because oftentimes, and I talked about this in the first day, part of what people come to these things for at this point is to see the artists that they like, to see the brands they follow on, you know, TikTok or Instagram or whatever. And proof, case in point, like, I talked to a couple people about the show and, like, the vertical of communication is still fucking Instagram. but they were, like, knocking it out of the park. Now, the problem is, you had a hard time finding people because of the navigation of this thing. But I'll get to that in a second. So they've taken all the dioramas out. So that, like, you don't just kind of come across them. They put them all in a line upstairs. And then across from that was the Jujutsu Kaisen experiential domain expansion where you could go and you could, like, lie down on the ground and experience, what's his face? Gojo's infinite void. Which was just a scene from anime from the first season when he does the infinite void. When he uses the infinite void domain expansion on Jogo and what, but like bent to a dome shape. It was fun, but nothing that I would like. It was fun, but not as impressive as it could have been. And then you get out of that, and they've got all the, like, picture areas lined up one after another. And it just, like, scatter that stuff around a little. Like, reward people on the show floor for, like, wandering. B, that coalesces traffic a little bit. And there were a couple, like, selfie moments on the show floor. Like, specifically, you could go to the Viz manga booth. You could go to the Viz booth and take a picture of yourself getting eaten by the zombie shark from Zom 100. Or the JoJo world, the JoJo's booth had like all the pictures of all the different Joseph Joestars, and then a frame that you could step behind. Same thing with Oshinoko had a social media post booth basically. And, like, but, like, the, like, big diorama that you could step in and take pictures in could have been scattered around on the main show floor in order to kind of coalesce traffic and control traffic a little bit. If you could do get people gravitating toward that and out of the aisles. But it's just, like, that big showmanship of, oh, you have a, you know, 2-story tall inflatable Luffy. You have a Macy's Day Parade float in this room right now with me. Was definitely missing. And this is just the thing I believe that part of the exchange that is happening with companies that allows those companies to be massive and control so much more than anybody really thinks about at first blush is that they do something for the customers. So, like, and I think that in this current era of purse string tightening, the first thing to go are the stuff that they do just to benefit us, that they do to, like, prove to us that it's okay that they're around. So, like, all of a sudden that means Viz doesn't need to have the inflatable Luffy there or the, like, life-size Goku there. But the interesting thing is, like, the company that really needed to do that and did do that the most is Crunchyroll. Crunchyroll is the one that set up all the dioramas. Crunchyroll basically set up an alley towards its own stage that said, this is why you should be okay with us being the biggest name in anime streaming. This is okay, why you should be okay with a duopoly, essentially, between Crunchyroll and HIDIVE. It's kind of like, those are the two big anime streaming platforms right now. And HIDIVE just high-dove off of a cliff a little, because I believe on December 14th, and I'm going to mention this in the news show, but on December 14th, they're dropping support for a lot of different regions that they were in. And but this is also Crunchyroll's. This is Crunchyroll's, one of Crunchyroll's big East Coast showings. And so, like, they had the stage with, like, the hype people. They had the stage with the professional hype people. They had the alley of, this is why you want us to continue to pay us your subscription cost. They had all that stuff. There was no... That... This thing was as much a sales pitch as it was a, like, celebration of fandom on Crunchyroll's part. And in terms of, like, the Viz Media booth, the Aniplex booth, the thing I will give the, like, Fate booth is they brought motorcycles. They brought these big, cool fantasy motorcycles that you could take pictures on. For the difficulty and the cost of going to these conventions, because I'm going to break it down for you for a minute here. I got a hotel room. I didn't get the bare bones hotel room because I got that last year, and that hotel was a piece of shit. I walked past it and it is still open. They seem to have repaired the floor, finally, in the lobby. In their weird lobby. But the cost of my hotel room was about $600, give or take. The cost of the ticket was, I think, like $136 or something. That's almost a south. That's close to $800. The cost of food, meaning eating a meal, eating all your meals out for about 3 days, is about $20 a meal. That gets you up over $900, probably, definitely. That means it's almost $1,000 a day for me to just in $1,000 all in to just not all at once, granted, but just go to this convention. And even if I wasn't staying in the city, and I was just going to the convention, I was going in and out every day, that's still, you know, $20 a day in terms of a train ticket. That brings it down, but that brings it down by a significant amount, but you're still up there. You're still multiple hundreds of dollars to do the thing. And if you're going to go into this wonderland, it should really be a wonderland. It should be balls to the wall, wild, insane. And it's not like companies aren't willing to spend the money. So this is the best case in point I can give for that, which is I had just gone to the DB Home Show because in my everyday life, I'm a furniture buyer. I'm a very high-end furniture buyer. Like, I buy for the 1% and shit. And so I go to these interior design shows all over the country, essentially. Like, I've gone to ones in Chicago. I've gone to, you know, I've gone to a bunch in New York because that's my main city. And when I was there, the billboard right outside the Javits, which is pretty noticeable, was that wasn't like the Javits digital hello, welcome to the Javits billboard, was a Nike billboard with a big QR code on it. I have a picture of it. When I got down there for this, and that was a week ago, that interior design show, it was a billboard for Persona Q. It was just a billboard that was tailored to anime fans. All of a sudden, you got within about a block of the Javits, and you started to see those like paste posters that promote something were and all anime related. Like, I think the one that was everywhere was the Spy X Family one, which I also took pictures of. this is starting to be, and this is, I think, more than it was last year even, or the year, or 2019, I didn't go the year before, but 2019, this is starting to be a big deal, and not just starting to be, but it is a big deal. It's a big enough deal where, you know, like, all the restaurants and stuff know who's around. The hotel, like, you know, people, the hotels and party venues are booked for those nights. I just can't think of a better reason to spend the money on the big showpieces. And I know that, like, everything's a balance sheet and blah, 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 blah. But, like, go full Big Apple Anime Fest. Go full, like, World Anime Party insanity. And do it. Because you're... So a thing that's true about being an otaku, about being in the fandom, if you're new here, I'm going to let you in on a secret. It's expensive. Or it's expensive to, like, be the kind of otaku who has tons of figures, who, like, supports the stuff they like. It's just expensive. It's expensive, really, to be a fan in any, like, nerdy way, but it can be uniquely expensive of anime fans. You know, there's figures that go anywhere from, you know, $20 at the lowest end to thousands of dollars at the highest end. You know, all the games, all the merchandise, all that stuff is a cost. And, yeah, you don't need it all or any of it. You can, if you're an anime fan who's just paying for a Crunchyroll subscription, the $6 a month, you're just as valid as somebody who's, like, is spending real adult money on shit. And I include myself in that. Like, I swing in both directions often. But the least the companies could do is, when it comes time to put on a show, put on the show. And like I said, I'm not saying I didn't have tons of fun, see all kinds of cool stuff, you know, talk to a bunch of people, meet a bunch of people at this convention in this atmosphere. But what I am saying is, like, throw the party. You know, do the right thing by the fandom and throw the party. You asked us all to buy a ticket to the party, and you didn't throw it all the way. And I know the things change, like, people come up with different plans, but case in point, like, there were tons of people there. I posted a video to Instagram Reels of opening morning this morning, the third morning, and it was mobbed. It was insane. Give him a giant Luffy. Give him life-size Goku. Give him life-size Vegeta. Give them, like, the big, bombastic, awesome thing to do. Give them the thing to see. Give them, like... And, once again, when you walked into the, like, Crunchyroll justification alley, is what I'm gonna call it, the first thing you saw was, first off, like, a big, round Crunchyroll, like, logo thing that was just like, you have arrived into the physical embodiment of Crunchyroll. You have arrived into the Crunchyroll domain expansion. Welcome. And then you look to your right, and there is a beautiful life-size statue of their mascot, Crunchyroll Hime. And you look to your left, and there's all of these dioramas. It's a Crunchyroll shop, of course. There's all these dioramas. And, like, Crunchyroll shop is always staffed. The staff is really understanding and accommodating. You know, to people who will just, like, be like, what do you need? You don't go unnoticed. And I think that's... I've been doing this for basically the day. Is I think that's really what the solution to the puzzle is that Crunchyroll gave service. And all the panels that were... that I liked, that were good, were of service to the fandom. They were of a kind... they were a presentation... they were a presentation that was to you and that cared about what you were getting. They weren't... they weren't like you were being, like I said before, a couple times, being press released at. And I think that's part of the responsibility of the people who make things and ask for your money in return, is on that scale, is to be of service to the people who are giving the money. Because if you don't... Aniplex of America, Aniplex in general, has kind of notoriously the most expensive releases on the market. And if you look at their shows, you see shows that are like guaranteed bangers. Like, they've got a pretty good formula of what they go after in terms of licensing. And they merchandise the hell out of the stuff. And they charge an arm and a leg for stuff. But if you went to their booth to try and buy merch, it was gone. Everything was sold out. They should make that not so. Like, it should be, like, they're on an order of magnitude different than something like, say, the, like, hentai licensing website Faku. Faku, it's like putting everything in a everything they can get their hands on in a truck and coming down here. Aniplex is, like, a big deal. One of the biggest deals. They are a prestige licensor of things. You know, pay the money. Do the deals you need to do to be able to get stuff, like, stored somewhere. So when, by the time you go to your panel, which is, I think I went, that was the first thing I did on the second day. It shouldn't be that you're sold out of everything. It shouldn't be that because someone didn't get to it on the first day, when it wasn't even... So the idea here is that the first day is kind of a half a day situation, almost. You go from about 2 o'clock in the afternoon till 10. The middle is 10 to 10. The middle day, the like that Saturday, 10 to 10. And then the Sunday is like, it was 10 to 4, technically. It shouldn't be that the period of time in which the dealer floor was open, which was like a half day situation, was so mobbed that you are sold out of everything in your inventory. And not like everything in your inventory as a artist alley, which, by the way, none of the Artist Alley people sold out that fast. But on a main mark, on the marquee, on the brochure person, like, company, it's just like that shouldn't be. And then, and just kind of thinking about this, like, get my gears going. Then when somebody says that in the panel, just like looks out like everything's sold out, the next thing you hit is the Black Friday sale? Come on. Get it together. And it's just like, That kind of stuff shouldn't happen. Like, and yes, some of it's unavoidable. Like, some, like, you're always going to have constraints. But it's just, there's a difference between scarcity and inconvenience. And inconveniencing a core consumer. And is it like a real end of the world thing? No. That you couldn't like buy the limited edition steel box of Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. No. But it is a, it, enough of that, often enough, will stop people from coming. And this is a weird thing. I have in my possession some shows that are no longer in print, or that were printed once. A perfect example is Monster Girl Reviewers, or like Monster Brothel Reviewers, or whatever it is, Ichizoku Review, which was an infamous show. If you don't know anything about that show, definitely go look it up. It was an infamous show that Funimation simulcast in its season a couple years back, and found out that they had essentially paid, they thought they were getting a, like, skirting the line ecchi show. They ended up getting a basically porno show. Like, full on, they, like, people were full on, like, banging by episode 2. I think they got to episode 3, actually. And everybody was like, whoa, this is no longer ecchi. And Funimation was like, whoa, we didn't know what we bought. So they dropped it in the middle of the season. In the beginning of the season. You had to go online and find alternate sources for episode 3. It was wild. And so when it came out that it was going to be published in America by Right Stuff, everybody, like, lots of, like, just weird eccentrics were like, I don't really want to watch this show, but I feel like I should own this show because I don't think this show's going to get printed a second time in English. And sure enough, I don't think it has. So, like, the editions of that show go for a lot of money. An unnerving amount of money. But my point is that, like, that didn't need to happen. Like, that's a, like, universe conspiring against the release of a show. You don't need to creating that scarcity artificially in a setting where people come because they'll have an opportunity to actually get the stuff they want and not, like, have to deal with stuff selling out because the site crashed or something. It's just not a great experience. It doesn't endear people to you as the licensor, because the thing that, and this is the other thing, is the thing that Crunchyroll seems to understand is that it's not the brand. It's just not the brand. It's not the lifestyle brand. It's not the thing you love isn't Crunchyroll. The thing you love is what Crunchyroll allows you to do, which is stream anime. And, you know, like, The Viz booth was teamed up with matched together with the Hulu booths, and, like, the closest thing to, like, product marrying company is HoloLive, And, like, they held a big Holo live stream that went on forever in the middle of the show floor. but it's... Like, give fans an opportunity to celebrate the things they like in a big, weird, couldn't-do-it-any-other-place way. The, like... The taking the picture with the zombie shark is a great example. The previous year's, like, giant blow-ups were a fantastic example. Like, let people just marvel at the thing they love. You know, get life-size statues of characters. Don't do cutouts. Get life-size statues. Pay the money. The cutouts are fun, but they're not like... They don't inspire wonder. And, like, that's the thing that the previous year had that this year had less, was this year had less wonder, had less, like... I looked up less. I felt like it was fun. It was absolutely fun. But it wasn't like... The stops were not pulled, is what I'm going to just say. The stops were not pulled. I know I'm being harsh. And I know that, like, this is... But the thing is like... I go to this knowing that, like, this is the one time a year I go to a con. Because it's my big con that I go to every year at this point. It's not, but in the same way that every movie you see will probably be somebody's favorite movie, every time you go to a con, it's somebody's first anime con. Like, you want them to go to the best thing they can go to. And I went to this and definitely thought people would do the first con. And it just didn't... I knew it wasn't the best thing they could have done. You know? So, on that note, that wraps up my thoughts on Anime NYC. The best panel I went to was the last panel I went to. And that was with two members of the Hip Hop Collective from Hybrid Thoughts, which does most of the hip hop you hear in anime at this point. Kind of. Like, the hip hop that's in Jujutsu Kaisen is them. The hip hop that's in Blood Blockade Battlefront is them. If you've heard hip hop in anime, it's usually either Ninjabes or them. And Ninjabes is no longer with us. Rest in power. But on that note, if you like the podcast, new episodes usually come out every Wednesday and Thursday. And stay tuned this Wednesday for a very, very interesting news show. Because most of it will be news that I was there firsthand to see, most likely. On that note, I'll talk to you on Thursday.